Welcome to Civiline Podcasts, part of our World Risk Register Threat Monitoring Service. These podcasts are released on a weekly basis, covering timely and relevant topics. In these discussions, we hope to shed light on evolving scenarios and provide actionable predictions and implications. We hope you enjoy listening, and we welcome any feedback. Hello, and welcome to our latest Civiline podcast. Today, we're going to be talking about the recent events in Iran. And to do that, I'm joined by our Middle Eastern team, Natasha Spreadborough and Noor Kabaita. Natasha, I'll start with you, if that's okay. Perhaps you could give me a bit of a summary of what's been going on in the last week in Iran.
Yeah, so it's a really interesting situation. Iran in the past week has seen a wave of protests more expansive than anything we've seen pretty much since 2009, since the Green Movement. They began last Wednesday, Thursday-ish, and really started to rev up by Friday, beginning in a city called Mashhad in the northeast of Iran, and really spreading round to the whole of the country, or at least the whole of the populated areas of the country. They're really interesting in that they have been featured mainly by lower income Iranians coming out with economically driven anger, triggered in part by the 2018 budget that is raising fuel prices, taking away subsidies, but also by wider economic anger, or anger driven by the economic situation since the JCPOA, and really even before. Iranians on the ground were really promised by Rouhani a lot of benefits from the JCPOA, and the Iranian economy being much more opened up, and sanctions being lifted. And this, I see the protest as kind of a response to this, of the benefits that they just haven't received, and anger at the government for directly doing things to inhibit that, inhibit the improvements, issues with corruption, issues with them either lining their own pockets or funding foreign adventures, their regional influence in Syria, in Lebanon, in Palestine, but then also indirectly just not taking care of them, which is why I think it's been the lower income Iranians, ethnic minorities, not like entirely, but it's definitely been these populations who've been so angry because they really feel like they've been sidelined by the state. Instead of places like Tehran and the really big cities being the center of these protests, it's actually been smaller towns and cities, like a large number of them, in more rural areas that have generally seen bigger, or like comparatively bigger protests, and then also more harsh crackdowns.
So aside from Mashhad, where have been the sort of the main centers of the movement?
Yeah, or at least I'd say the beginning.
So
Mashhad, I just don't want to say like it was the absolute center, but it was definitely the beginning, because it spread out to pretty much the whole of the country. Like we've seen other things in Tehran, in Qom, but to a large amount of areas in like provinces like Kermanshah, which saw the earthquake back at the end of 2017, up near the northwest, in the borders of the country, but like really everywhere. I think it's important to note that it's been smaller towns rather than it having one particular center, because that's like really representative of the movement in itself, or I don't really want to even call it a movement. It's because it's so disorganized. It's not had like a center or a leader.
And Qom is a particularly significant town. That's where Khomeini lives, the Ayatollah Khomeini. Has he been affected by the protests so far?
No, the important thing about Qom, I think, is it's the religious significance behind the city itself. It's one of those kind of hubs for that, you know, for the Shia community in general. So it's quite indicative that although Tehran might not be affected that much, but the fact that it's hitting kind of the more religious establishment as well kind of shows the extent of the protests being quite important.
Very interesting. So it's moving more into the drivers and what this is all about. I mean, you touched on most of them so far already, but let's dig down into that a little bit more. So are these protests broadly anti-establishment? They're not only against the government, but also against the theocracy, or those establishments which are seen to be sort of part of the fabric of the country. Is that fair to say?
I think it's a really interesting question. I mean, I think when we're looking at this situation, it's come about so quickly, and it's come about in what I think is a comparatively new way. Like, despite the fact that Iran has such a history of protests, the demographics and the locations of this, I think, are pretty new. So I don't want to jump in. I don't think anyone can jump in and make like hard and fast conclusions about it yet. That being said, there's definitely a lot of anger at the establishment, but it's not... I don't see it as it being anger at the establishment inherently because they are the establishment, or like angry at the regime because it's inherently a regime. It's more, from my perspective, about a state-society contract where the state just hasn't provided for these citizens in the way that it should have. And then that's been exacerbated by what was promised from the JCPOA, that there was such an expectation. Expectations were raised so much after it. Mm. And there's just been such a contrast between that and then what's actually happened, was actually the situation on the ground. And then that's just been driven further with the new budget.
And that's a really important point, actually, that you make there, that it's not purely an anti-establishment movement. It's not the beginnings of a revolution, for example.
Yeah, this, I really don't
this,
think
this
that.
Is about, this is much more about a sense of betrayal, having voted for a government that is going to enact JCPOA and adhere to it and promise all of the benefits of it, and that just hasn't happened. So it's not such a it's not going to necessarily overthrow the government. But
that being said, there are other aspects to it, in that it's not necessarily a movement that's entirely Rouhani supporters. Like, there have been some suggestions, some indications that at the start it was triggered by like actual political leaders, opponents of Rouhani, and that has maybe been exacerbated that to an extent. Perhaps the IRGC leaving it so much that they're able to then, as it builds up, they're able to then institute a harsher crackdown and expand their authoritarianism. Mm. It's not one group. I mean, it's a really diverse country, diverse ethnic groups, diverse political views. So it's not necessarily like a homogenous whole, but there's some general trends, but other things that, you know, I want to point out.
And so looking at the drivers and kind of what's making this happen, do you think the fact that it is such a spontaneous and a discordant or incoherent movement, do you think there's a sense that this was a breaking point of broader discontent that's always been bubbling along under the surface? And that fundamentally, the sanctions that Iranians have lived under for decades have really taken their toll, and people really want to see prosperity.
Yeah, absolutely.
And they thought that was coming with JCPOA and all of the promises that came along with that. And it's it's the fact that hasn't happened that has caused this sort of underlying discontent.
Yeah, absolutely. I think if we're going to talk about discontent, then we need to think about both economic and political underlying causes over like the past 30, 40 years, because it's not just recently with the JCPOA where the economic situation has become more disappointing. Obviously, living under a system in which the government is allowed to maintain this corruption without the freedom of speech to call them out is also creating an ongoing frustration. It's not necessarily ideological. I don't want to say they don't like the regime because it's just a regime, but it's the circumstances that imposes are obviously creating an ongoing frustration in a population who want to be able to prosper individually and also as a country. And I think that's a really important thing to consider when we're not just looking at what's going to happen in immediate term, but what's going to happen in the next year, the next 2 years with Iran, and how that's going to relate to the JCPOA, to its relations with the US, and to its regional influence, because all of these things are interconnected.
Cool. Yeah, absolutely. And stop you there, because let's dig into that. You know, what is going to happen next? So in the short term, are the protests going to continue, or does it look like they're winding down? And, you know, we in your daily analysis this morning, we saw that the IRGC has now started to get involved.
Yeah.
You know, perhaps, you know, what's going to happen in the immediate term?
Yeah, so it's definitely looking like the protests are kind of dying down, in the extent they're not growing. For the past couple of days, there haven't really been any new cities added, and there's videos and photos coming out showing much smaller protests, certainly in the more urban areas like Tehran. That being said, there's still a lot of videos and evidence from the ground coming out showing clashes. So they're absolutely continuing, but they're definitely not growing and to an extent subsiding. I think that's really going to be quelled in the immediate term by the IRGC coming in, because they are like physically repressing them, but then also with social media, there's been a really serious crackdown, like literally not being able to use the internet, so not being able to communicate and spread the word and the organization as it is, which is really how these protests have come about. We'll see tomorrow with Friday prayers, which could be a bit of a trigger point, and we could see stuff like temporarily exacerbate again. But I would expect in over the next week, things to definitely not increase and slowly decrease. That being said, it's still a really volatile situation. Like the whole nature of these protests mean that they are not predictable. This isn't something that we've seen like this for a while, and it could suddenly turn. Anger is a very unpredictable thing, and there is a lot of anger, and that could suddenly be redirected. But it's not in the interests of the IRGC and not in the interests of Rouhani, obviously, to let this grow anymore, really, which I think is why the IRGC have stepped in.
We spoke previously that key flashpoints would be if there's any major clashes between the IRGC or perceived heavy-handedness of the IRGC and protesters, and that could be a trigger point.
Yeah.
But ultimately, given the drivers that we've just looked at, to an extent, the demonstrators have made their point, and the government can take that on board, and so we could see the thing gradually start to reduce.
I think it's more about they losing momentum, really. I mean, they're not organized, they don't have leaders, so it's nothing. If there isn't a goal, if there isn't a leader, then that's a big difference with the Green Movement. Then there isn't anything to drive them forward, and like it's just natural human organization, they will slowly die out. And then the IRGC coming in and physically and then on media repressing them, then it's going to hinder that further. But I mean, the anger is obviously going to stay there in the longer term. And as the JCPOA remains in such, I think, a tense situation, or even it's just growing, really. I think we're going to see that in 2018 even more with relations with the US.
So this could remain a sticking point going forward. And what does this mean in the sort of medium, longer term for Rouhani and for political stability in Iran in general?
That's a really interesting question. I think this is definitely shaken Rouhani's instability to an extent, in that it's obviously a contentious issue and has got such widespread support because of what it was supposed to bring. And I think the protests have really highlighted that, really highlighted the anger amongst the population. But that being said, I don't think that it's, indicative of a revolution or him about to fall. I think it's going to take some time for us to be able to, information to come out about the extent to which this was organized or exacerbated by Rouhani's political opponents, which is definitely an issue. And I think as that does come out, that's going to provide us with some information about Rouhani's stability going forward, because if there has been more political subterfuge really from his opponents in this, I think that's going to give us some kind of idea of the threat that he's maybe facing.
And the other key aspect that we haven't spoken about just yet, but perhaps we should come on to now, is obviously the role of the US. And the future of JCPOA or Rouhani's ability to deliver on his election promises and deliver that economic prosperity is partly dependent on the US sanctions, US attitudes towards JCPOA and Iran more broadly. So firstly, do you think the US have been at all involved in the protests? And secondly, perhaps it's too early to tell. And secondly, how do you think Trump will respond to this? What does that mean for the future of this situation?
So those are really interesting questions. I mean, there's actually been kind of a debate going on amongst US politicians and political minds about how involved the US should be. What should their response to this be? Should they be coming out in firm support of the Iranian protesters, or should they stay back? What is the best way to act? I mean, I don't think they have been heavily involved in any real way. There's been statements from some big names, but it's definitely not been something they've come out in incredibly strong support. I think with a lot of things with the US policy towards the Middle East has been not maybe the best organized or been a little bit erratic. There hasn't been like such a firm line, at least from the perspective of how people are receiving it in the Middle East. But I think that in the longer term, it's going to be perceived as something that maybe Trump can use to his support, or I'd say opponents of the deal could use it their support.
So does that mean that Washington now holds the keys to triggering or the opposite, containing unrest in Iran?
Absolutely not. No, I don't think so, because whilst this is something that was, discontent that was exacerbated by the JCPOA and that's issues, or the disappointment or the promises and the disappointment. And then again, with the budget, this is discontent like we've been talking about that's been going on for such a long time. And it's also like to do with structural issues in Iran, to do with the nature of the regime, to do with corruption, the fact that the segments of the population just aren't being allowed to prosper. The ethnic segments of the population are being so repressed, being treated so badly, like the Kurds, like the Balochis, and that's not to do with the US at all. That being said, I think that the uncertainty over the JCPOA is absolutely going to be a driver, perhaps of protests like this, or of slightly less extent throughout 2018. I think it's going to keep things unstable because it's going to add constant uncertainty, both for the political establishment and for civilians, about what is going to happen economically in 2018 and then going forward.
Yeah, and of course linked to broader questions that we addressed in the annual forecast on the future of the global economy. So you mentioned the Kurds and the Balochis and the Saudis.
Yeah.
So what do these protests mean regionally?
That's also a really interesting question. It's just an interesting topic all round, really. I mean, I think for Saudi Arabia, this is quite a nice thing to see because they've been with kind of succession issues with their own economic issues. They've been the ones, I think, seen in the last year to be a bit more disorganized, whilst Iran's just been much calmer, being like really doing well regionally, or being giving that perception of their influence and their success with the Qatar blockade. Just been so much drama, I think. And Saudi Arabia seem maybe not to be so like cool and in control. And then this happening, I think they're definitely, it looks good, I think, as an image thing for them. I mean, I don't think it's going to fundamentally change the trends that we're expecting to see in 2018, but I definitely think it's going to put Iran, at least in the medium term, kind of on the back foot a little bit. I think it raises some interesting questions with regards to popular support for Iran's regional actions. You know, we've seen slogans in the protests of anger against Iran's interventions in Syria, their influence in Gaza and Palestine. And I think that's going to be more of an issue than perhaps people initially thought going into 2018, because we're expecting to see growing Iranian influence, expanding on the border in Syria with Israel, and keeping pushing in the region, really, and seeing the popular anger at that over the amount of money that is spent on Iran's actions in the region. I think it's going to make it more unstable, perhaps.
Sure.
Some instability with regards to what they're able to do and what they're able to justify back home.
Yeah. So just to summarise, really, we've looked at the causes of the protests in Iran. We've looked at the main drivers, and we've identified that the economic factors are very influential in this, but also questions around central government's attitude towards minorities in the country
and lower income
sects, absolutely,
marginalized populations.
And we've identified that this is an issue which is likely to remain, and although the current protests are likely to draw down in the coming weeks, this is expected to be a
absolutely,
driver of further unrest in Iran in the future. And obviously linking in, as you so eloquently put, to a whole load of different issues in the region, notably around Kurds and Kurdistan, Kurdish sovereignty, Saudi and Iranian tensions and struggles for hegemony, also a US attitude towards the region as well, and all of these things that we've tracked quite closely in our annual forecast. That pretty much sums it up from us. Is there anything that Natasha nor you'd like to add at this point?
No, I think we've covered a lot of really interesting things today.
Perfect. Thank you very much for all of your insight, as ever. And if we have provoked questions, then please do get in touch with us, and we'd be more than happy to answer those. Thank you. Thank you for listening, and we hope you found this podcast useful. If you'd like to learn more about our services, or if you have any questions or feedback, please get in touch at info@sibylline.co.uk.